Greetings and welcome to St. Dominic's Weekly. This is Father Michael. Today we continue our Meet the Novices series. And today, Brother Jose Maria, and wonderful discussion about his own upbringing in Southern California. Do a little bit of deep dive into the dynamics of family. He's a middle child, and we talked about why the middle child doesn't have as many photographs as the oldest and the youngest, and how that plays out in his own novice class. There are 8 novices, so he talks about the dynamics of what he both brings to the class and how the class can be challenging for him as a middle child. Talks a little bit about his college experience at the Catholic University of America and how that ultimately led him to discern a vocation, to hear God's call to be a Dominican priest. Talk about his patron, who was a martyr during the Cristeros movement in Mexico, and that affinity that he has to his patron saint. And then into some fun facts about him and a wonderful story about a bullfight in Toledo, Spain, and his first experience with alcohol. So we hope you enjoy a wide-ranging, wonderful conversation with Brother Jose Maria. So whether you're on the go or taking it slow, many, many blessings as you enjoy today's show. Greetings and welcome to St. Dominic's Weekly. This is Father Michael again. We're joined by a very fantastic novice. We've got Brother Jose Maria Barrero. Very good. So I love. I was with your novice brothers who have the trill of the R there. Mm-hmm. I just love the double R. Okay. Who doesn't like a good double R?
Brother Thaddeus, I think he tends to have a trouble with the double R.
Does he have? Okay. All right. But even if you have trouble with it, you got at least dive into it and love it. So how do you say your?
It's Brother Jose Maria Barrero is the
Barrero.
Name.
I knew that. Very nice. So we don't often address each other by our last name. Right. So it's one of my one shots to get to do it. So welcome to the show. And as with all of our novices, as we kind of roll out the kind of series of get to meet the novices, what's been interesting is just hear a little bit about your story, how you got to be at this point. And for yourself, you're native to California, is that right?
I'm originally from Southern California, Ranch Cucamonga area, San Bernardino County, so an hour and a half east of Los Angeles.
Yeah, okay.
Born and raised. Grew up Catholic. I'm one of 3 siblings. I'm the middle child, so the least amount of pictures in my family home.
I've never thought about that. The middle child has the least amount of pictures.
Yeah, it's always the first. The oldest is always the gets to do the first car. Yeah. Gets to do the first things. The baby, the child, the youngest is the baby. They get all the attention. The middle child is the unlucky one.
So do you feel like you're at a disadvantage, middle child or middle children are at a disadvantage somehow? Or what?
Not,
how would you?
Not so much a disadvantage. Okay. I think it would be more
lack of attention.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lack of attention, or like I always put it as I learn from the mistakes that my siblings make. So I'm the one who didn't really get in trouble all too often.
Oh.
And I learned that, okay, my older brother, he did stuff. My younger sister, she got in trouble. Yeah. I was like, okay, I'm just going to learn and not get in trouble. So I was like, you fly under the radar almost, I think.
Nice.
Sometimes.
You could coast a little bit, or at least
right.
Get a little off.
Right.
I love it. Now, is it true that oftentimes they talk about a middle child being a little bit of a peacemaker or wanting, or not shying away from conflict, but liking conflict to be resolved, like basically having virtues or skills to be able to navigate around conflict? Would you say that's true for yourself?
I would say so. Yeah,
okay.
Just because I like to shy away from conflict.
Yeah.
I like everything. Resolution to be the
to win the day.
To win the day at the end of the day. But I would say so. Because, you have the first child who is just kind of headstrong and wants to accomplish everything. Little child, the youngest sibling is just like, let's have like a free spirit almost.
Yeah.
And so the middle child, I think, wants to get between the two and like, okay, we have things to accomplish. Let's go from there. If there's conflict, let's address it and get it.
Classic middle child. I love it.
Right.
So now being part of the novice class, do you see those dynamics at work between eldest and youngest and you being a middle a little bit, or at least for me, you can only speak to yourself, but for yourself.
I think it's, or at least among the novice class, I think it's regardless of your age, there are stronger personalities, and they're like I'm on the other end where I'm a little bit more quiet and a little bit more reserved in the way that I interact with and talk to. And
for sure.
And so it depends. I mean, it creates an interesting dynamic, I think, among us, because we have a lot of us who have a master's degree, who've gone to college.
Yeah.
They have a lot more experience, and so they're able to kind of plug in or participate in a conversation a lot more lively, and because of their personality, because of their interests. With me, on the other hand, and a few of us there, it's more of a like I enjoy listening more. I enjoy a good story. When someone's telling a story, I engage by listening rather than plugging, like giving my two cents. If that makes sense.
Oh, sure.
Right.
No, do you actually? Let's. I'm going to do this right now. You got eight brother. Yeah, there's eight novices this
eight
year.
Of us. Mm-hmm.
Do you happen to know where they fall in their family line, everybody?
Let's see. I think.
You're middle.
I'm the middle.
Yeah.
Brother Koa Mary, he's the oldest of three sisters.
So he's the oldest.
Brother David is the oldest. No. I think he's the oldest boy.
Okay.
Out of two sisters.
Okay. So two old. Thaddeus?
Thaddeus is, I think, the youngest.
All right.
Middle child.
Middle child.
Philip is the oldest of two.
Yep.
Brother Luke Maria is the youngest of two.
Okay.
And then Diego Maria is an only child.
Only child, yep. Francis is
Francis
younger.
Dominic is the youngest out of his siblings. Yeah.
Wow. So that makes now I'm pretty. You're bringing up something that now is coming into place for me in terms of youngest. So you might be. Are you the only middle child then?
I think so. Like directly.
Yeah,
in the middle.
That's what I mean.
Think so
that makes total sense to me. I'm loving this. Oh, okay. So then. Oh my goodness.
We're waiting for evaluations to come out from certain.
But I'm putting these things together. But what I love about it is just the dynamic. So there are, you know, as you say, more vocal personalities in a community, and that tends to be in line with just how, because it's novitiate, it's a kind of family within a family. So you have the Dominican family, the brotherhood, and the priest, but then you're a very intentional group just for this year, where you basically do everything together.
Yes,
and so you can't tell, but there's a great wide smile that Brother Jose Marie has right now that is belying both the agony and the ecstasy, no doubt.
A friend of mine, in D.C. when I went to school, she was a coworker of mine. She was in religious life for a period of time, and then she got married and converted a Protestant pastor, and now has a beautiful baby boy.
Yeah,
so she had said that the religious life for her, a monastic life. She had said that it's a test tube experiment of nature and grace, and I think the novitiate is a very interesting dynamic of that. And so,
a test tube of experience of nature and grace,
right?
Oh, very good. So far so good.
So far so good.
Well, let's step back a little bit just to your own vocation and Southern California boy, middle child, but in terms of particular discernment, was it going to Catholic? You mentioned Catholic University of America. Is that where kind of things took shape in terms of the explicit nature of your vocation?
I think to backtrack a little bit, growing Southern California, I was raised Catholic.
Yeah.
The three of us, we all went to Catholic school in St. Joseph's in Upland, California. And then I went to Damien High School, which is an all-guy Catholic high school in La Verne, California.
Mm-hmm.
And it was run by the Sacred Heart Fathers, St. Damien of Molokai's community. And so I got to know being involved in parish ministry, working with parish priests and then in religious order priests at my high school, I got to kind of discern that priesthood was kind of the calling. But because I felt more called to work in a parish, work with in youth ministry, got involved at my home parish in my diocese. So I got to really know what a diocesan priest does on a daily basis. And so I got to really discern that, I would say, seriously, seventh, eighth grade.
Nice.
And then
when
I remember looking on my, I think my freshman year of religion class in high school, the theology teacher posted the names of all the Cardinal Newman guide schools, and it was like Ave was there. He had a map of Franciscan in Steubenville. He like all the Benedictine and Atchison in Kansas.
The usual cluster of Catholic colleges. Exactly.
And so CUA, the Catholic University of America, was bolded, underlined, italicized.
Really?
So I was like, okay.
A gentle hint.
Yeah. So this
was TAC on there? I've got to know.
I think so. Yeah,
yeah,
I think
TAC.
Really small, no.
Yeah. 8-point font. Right. Okay. So Catholic University.
And
yeah.
So I got it. It looked impressive. I was impressed by their undergrad, in addition to their graduate offerings at the university. And I mean, being in Washington D.C. was in the back of my mind. Honestly, yeah. I just was. It had a really strong Catholic identity, mm-hmm. with kind of an array of, you have architecture majors, engineers, and so you have a lot of. The majority of people study there, politics, and so because it's in DC, and so you have just an array of people, and so just different minds, different backgrounds, different upbringings. It would have been interesting to study there, in addition to growing my Catholic faith there. And so from there, when I went to CUA, got involved in campus ministry, got involved in student ministry at CUA, and then that's how I got to know the Dominicans. The House of Studies for the Eastern Province is right across the street from CUA. And so I got to know them, got to know the student brothers, got to go to Vespers and dinner with them. And then in addition to the Ann Arbor Dominican Sisters of Mary Mother of the Eucharist, they also studied on campus.
Where do they live there?
They live in the residence halls with freshmen, sophomore women.
Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, so, interesting. Mm-hmm.
There are typically four or six. I think currently there are six right now, but typically there were four, two in one residence hall, two in another. But then they go and they pray in the chapel that houses the freshmen boys. And so,
really?
Yeah.
So it's like, wait, so their chapel is in the freshman guys' dorm?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And the Ann Arbor, and they themselves are often very young, college age. Kind of, they made big splash when they went on Oprah Winfrey a number of years ago, right? So they're definitely a very burgeoning and robust vocations. And if you work up in Marin County at the school, a Catholic school in Catholic Marin. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so you were, and of course the Dominicans are right across the street, as you say,
right?
From like, you literally throw a football across the street and you can hit the friary there. So you got to know the Dominicans there a little bit,
right? And so actually my first encounter with them, I mean, it was via Vespers, mm-hmm. beautiful experience, the chanting, the choral, the singing antiphonally back and forth, and everything was beautiful. Mm-hmm. Then when I went a second time, I went for, they have Friday night adoration, mm-hmm. at the House of Studies. And so I went with a friend, and I guess it was a come and see weekend that weekend. And so it was a preached adoration.
Mm.
And I just, when the Dominican, one of the friars was preaching, I just like, it went over my head. They're too intellectual. Yeah. I had no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
I closed off to Dominican life. It's just,
really?
Wow,
that's interesting. Really?
And so
okay.
it was too intellectual. I'm not smart enough for this. Like, this is not, I'm going to stick with diocesan and be comfortable with the diocesan seminary track and to be ordained as
that's
a
good to
priest.
Here, when because I often have to preach those
right.
those adorations for come and see.
Right.
In fact, I am the go-to guy right now.
Oh,
so I'm glad to hear. Okay, keep it simple.
Right, keep it simple. Yeah, exactly, exactly. No, people are attracted to the order because it has a strong intellectual tradition,
of
doctrinal
course.
Preaching, and everything.
Of
but I think it's for the guys who just want to be out there in ministry.
Yeah,
it's just to kind of hear. The salvation history, hear God's love for you.
Yeah.
Sometimes is the simpler, kind of easier kind of message to hear and to absorb and to kind of
to be able to feel connected to.
Right.
I know there was Father Finbar Hayes of I'm remembering God bless his soul. He said he was a fantastic. I found him to be fantastic. Very a little bit eclectic and eccentric, but wonderful preacher. Irish background, but he would give. If he had to preach on Sunday, he'd have a different homily for every mass, just so he wouldn't get bored. But he had a law. He's also got a law degree while he was going through, like contemporaneously with being pastor. I can't imagine getting a law degree and being pastor at the same time. But anyway, brilliant man. But he said something once that was just very striking to me. That he said, "You can't be too." I mean, this is someone who was. Had, you know, he had forgotten more poetry than I know, than I memorize. I mean, he's just a intellectual giant in terms of both memory and facility and oratory skill. And yet he said, you can't be too simple. Like, if you think it's simple, then look at it again, edit it down and make it more simple. And you cannot make it too simple.
Wow.
And I thought that was interesting coming from, and certainly there might be someone who says that because they don't have perhaps the intellectual gifts towards that.
Right.
But for someone who obviously had the facility, the ability, even the love for being able to really dig in and express the intellectual life in a full array, to be able to say, take what you want to say and make it more state it more simply, mm-hmm. so that it might be more effective. And so when you're talking about your first encounter with the Dominicans being a bit lofty,
right,
I that does resonate for me in my own experience of preaching and perhaps a good guide for us for you going forward. So you heard the lofty sermon. It was like, I'm thinking
it
maybe not.
Away.
It kind of cut a little bit of a disconnect there. But what brought you back?
So
how did that go from there?
So through the thick and thin of my college experience, I was working part-time in a bookstore, working like 30, 40 hours a week in campus ministry on top of six classes a day, and so six classes in a semester, and so I.
You're crazy,
right?
That's 18 units,
right? Yeah,
plus working at the bookstore.
Right. And then in addition to working in campus ministry for 30, 40 hours a week. And so it's...
Oh, yeah. Just plus an extra 40-hour job.
Right. Exactly. They compensated for room and board, but...
For 40 hours a week, they better.
Right.
Well, when do you have time to sleep? Well, you don't need board. That's why.
Right. So I kind of stretched myself a little thin. And so I took a semester off from the university for a period of time. And I kind of... I mean, I was also studying philosophy and theology, these kind of very kind of intellectually challenging topics. And so I had to step away from the university for a period of time and kind of reassess what my plan of action was, what I was going to study and that sort of thing. And so I decided, okay, so I took it to adoration, took it to the Blessed Sacrament at my home parish. And I said, like, well, why do I want to be a priest? Why do I want to continue doing this? And so it kind of resonated in my head. And for some reason, I kind of just like an aha moment. I was like, oh, like for the youth, like for, and so, cause back home, my pastor kind of got rid of my youth ministry program, kind of called them a lost cause. And they were there to put chairs away after an event. And it's just like, I was like, no, you need to accompany them. You need to have resources for them. You just need to be there for our young people. And so for me, that kind of resonated and said like, well, I mean, I loved doing college ministry, college chaplaincy, loved being in a parish. And so like, what brings those two together? And so, and I kind of thought of religious life at that moment and said, like, what? I never really thought of religious life, but in the first people I knew, like, well, the Dominicans seem like they're doing something right. And so, so I decided, like, I called up Father Stephen Maria that summer or that November, this would have been 2015, and called Father Stephen Maria up, and he said, yeah, come up and for the weekend. And we're having to come and see in November, and said, like, well, and then it kind of that. Learning about the Dominican life, learning about the charism of the order and the work that they do with college students and the work that they do in parishes with young adults and that active contemplative life kind of just sealed the deal for me. I felt very much at peace with that in the first visit. So.
And at home more in the West, because as you mentioned, there are Dominicans in the East Coast, but there's a little bit different flavor, let's be honest, in terms of cultural kind of...
right.
kind of thing. What would you say is kind of the difference? So you've obviously familiar with both, but what might be some of those different flavors, and why do you think the West Coast really, you know, resonated?
Well, it was closer to home.
Sure.
First and foremost, but then it did feel a lot more at home.
Yeah.
I think that because it's a smaller province, the Western province, than it is to the Eastern province.
That's right.
I think
it's
because we have a more, I don't know. It's just the West Coast, I think, has a more, we have a greater fraternity, I think, because we're so small, we're able to get to know each other really well. And so because we have that bond, I think we're able to, it felt more of a family than it did kind of just like an organization or of a, I don't know, not to say that the Eastern province doesn't, but I think it's very unique for us to.
Yeah, we're better than they are.
Right. You studied with them. I don't know.
No, that's great. But it is, you know, one of the ways I put it is the access to that fraternity is a little different. In the West Coast, it's a little more, you know, kind of friendly, overtly, you know, where, you know, you walk down the hall, you say, hey, how's it going? You know, just kind of like greeting. You walk down the hall and just like eyes, the kind of initial repartee is not necessarily, I don't want to say like congenial at a surface level. But I will say this, though, the guys I studied with and being out there for a year, those are relationships and bonds which are just really deep. I could call, you know, any one of those guys up right now and be like, and not just talk about like news, sports, weather, but like talk about like what's going on in life and this, mm-hmm. that. And so you do have a kind of fraternity, but it's not, there's a little bit more of an ease of just kind of like lifestyle, I think, in terms right. of that's West Coast. Right. They think we're still, when I say they, I think the East Coast still thinks we're out on the mission trail with long beards and moonshine and a rifle.
Right. We're the cowboys.
Yeah, cowboys. No, it's someone calling me cow. Yeah. Your cowboy province. I'm like, you know, but you can tell, I mean, they've been around a lot longer. And so just like the East Coast itself. Right. So it's like a different vibe.
Yeah. Very much so.
but the West Coast kind of called you. And then, in terms of this year, so it's been you've been a novice now for almost at least an academic sort of year. What has it been surprise? What's been surprising? Been encouraging? Been, you know, how would you characterize this experience of the novitiate?
I think like two things really mm-hmm. kind of pop out. One, yeah. I didn't realize how close we would get as a class.
Yeah,
the eight of us. I mean, we started off with 10.
Yeah,
two guys left, but I didn't realize yeah. how close we would get uh-huh. as a class in such a short amount of time.
Yeah,
I think when it kind of, people leave for different reasons. They discerned out, or they took it in prayer. They have family obligations. They mm-hmm. want to pursue marriage, yeah. sort of thing. And so I think when we kind of grow in friendship with someone, and we kind of imagine like, okay, 50 years down the road, we're gonna yeah. celebrate our 50th anniversary. We're yeah. gonna do all these things. Yeah. We're gonna do ministry together. We're gonna yeah. like take the bull by the horns and yeah. just go yeah. for it and preach the gospel. But yeah. then when they kind of say like, well, maybe this life isn't for me, it's just like, but we're gonna do all these things.
And
so you develop these kind of bonds that I think transcend kind of, I mean, time and everything. Like,
it's
and,
so true,
right? And so it definitely, it's so that for me, that was surprising. I thought it would be more of a just okay, I kind of let my it like share my life
yeah.
over a period of time. But this yeah. I mean, it's throughout, like, I mean, years later, but I think now it's very, we're very close as a class, and
yeah.
that kind of surprised me.
Nice.
And then another,
and that, yeah. that speaks just to the community dimension of
right.
our life. So
right.
obviously, as being, you know, living in this community with you, mm-hmm. there's a senior community, but that doesn't replicate the novitiate experience in the
right.
same way, right? So there's a way in which the bond. I mean, there was 12 in my class, mm-hmm. and now there are 4. And that's at least as I was going through about, you know, having that ratio of about a third is about right. That's what you can expect.
Right.
These days, it's a little bit different in terms of the numbers, just because I think joining religious life is a little more intentional. In other words, in kind of the process of coming in,
mm-hmm.
but folks that you live novitiate with, I would say you have a shared experience
right.
that even people who discern out or, you know, married and you know, you meet after, you know, then now they're married and they have a family. Mm-hmm. There's a connection and a language you can speak that you can't really share with
right.
other people because of that.
Right.
I can only imagine it's like being in the military or something like that, the kind of correlative kinds
right.
of experience.
Where we have
school.
Like stories in prayer
yeah.
with our novice master. They
yeah.
have like wartime stories.
Exactly, exactly. Sometimes our stories of novice in prayer feel like wartime
right.
stories. So that fraternity, so the kind of the intensity of the community
the
and the bond of it
community.
Was really a thing. And that's, once again, that's what Saint, and that's part of the vision of Saint Dominic, mm-hmm. is that it's a radical way of living religious life, where we talk about a kind of poverty of not like material things in common, mm-hmm. but there's a kind of, I say, poverty or vulnerability with one another that you're kind of like, this is why you get to know each other so well, like a family, and you can only put on kind of the you know, the front for people, so to speak,
right.
like, oh, here's what I'm presenting to the world. Well, when you live with people in that close proximity, they see it all, the good, the bad, you
right.
know what I mean? So it really
that
is.
That interview kind of like presentable kind
yeah.
of person is,
yeah.
is depleted after like 3 weeks or so.
That's right.
It seems
exactly.
like, yeah.
They see bad hair days and all, right?
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Nice. So that was one aspect of the community. So, and then you said there was another aspect
there
that jumped out at you.
So during the novitiate,
yeah.
we give up our phones, our
yep.
computers. Kind
yes.
of, so for a millennial like myself,
yes.
it's kind of hard to
Yeah, talk
to
about that. No, I'm serious, because when I entered, I didn't, the internet, my access to the internet was just had started. We just, there was one at TAC, one computer. computer that had internet on the whole campus.
Oh my God.
And I went on it once and, you know, or twice, you know, my whole time there. And so entered, no phone, no anything. I wasn't even ordained till that time. So my whole experience of both novitiate and religious life,
wow,
no screens. And I didn't miss it because I didn't really know I had. It was something missing. But maybe to describe, you know, having a full, robust screen availability and this year being a kind of detachment from that. How has that been?
I think, for the most part, it's been kind of rewarding in a sense, because you do have, you're constantly on your phone, you're constantly on your computer typing, and so you constantly are able to look up and kind of see and interact with the world that's around you. Seeing people on the street, you have earbuds in and you're just walking along and not kind of ignore people, but you kind of see more that's around you, kind of you what you take for granted when you do have a phone and everything. But I think for this year in particular, because there's so much distraction having a phone and having in college in particular, where you have your phone, your computer in front of you doing work and you're on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, whatever.
So
you have all these distractions, but then I think because the distractions kind of pull you in a direction where you don't want to go sometimes, I think it's the struggles that you come in with, and even if you take away all those distractions, you still are facing them in the life, in this novitiate year. And so for me, that was kind of like, okay, I'm not perfect because I put on the habit. I'm not free from the distractions that are around me just because I put the habit on, because we're praying more often, because we're in adoration, we're in mass every day. And I think for me, that kind of struck me. So it kind of gave me a different way of addressing, okay, how do I enter deeper into prayer without these distractions that are in front of me? How do I enter deeper? How do I kind of refocus on what's in front of me, because what used to be in front of me isn't there anymore? And so how do I balance my time better? How do I look at resources? How do I how do I study without a computer, without a phone?
How do I live life without a screen?
How do I live life without a screen?
It almost seems like it's funny. I was visiting someone in the hospital and they were talking. They had had an injury, and so they were more or less learning how to walk again. They knew how to walk, but they were just kind of rehabbing. And as you describe how to do, you know, things in life without screens and things like that, it's almost like a kind of spiritual rehab.
Right.
It's kind of like, how do I be human again without this kind of crutch or this kind of thing?
It's so easy for people to kind of just slip into I'm bored. I'm going to listen to my computer or listen to my music.
Yes.
I'm going to go make a phone call. I'm going to text people. But you just kind of in the novitiate with 10 of us or 8 of us now, but now having to just look, I'm bored. How do I strike up a conversation? How do I talk to
someone, exactly. That's it. And so valuable for sure, especially as you say, every generation has its own virtues and strengths, but also its own challenges. And I think, as you say, for the millennial generation, that idea of relating in real, authentic, connective ways is really certainly for this year a kind of blessing for sure.
Yeah.
Well, no, so the community and the kind of like spiritual rehab from screens. I like that. Two kinds of things. Now, Brother Jose Maria, you obviously chose that, not obviously, but you did, you chose that religious name, or at least put it out there. It was accepted. We received the habit with that name. Is there a particular saint, or is this a patronage you have, or maybe give us that story?
So many people will say is it Jose Maria Escriva?
Of course.
From the Opus Dei founder. I'm like, well, no, a different Jose Maria.
Okay. Tell us about other Jose Maria.
He is named Saint Jose Maria Robles Hurtado. He was a Mexican martyr during the early 20th century, during the Cristeros War.
Oh.
So he's...
Miguel Pro Days?
Miguel Pro Days.
Miguelito.
The feast day of May 21st, Saint Cristobal Magallanes and companions. Uh-huh. He was one of those and companions.
He was a companion.
You're right. And so he was a diocesan priest in Guadalajara, the Guadalajara Archdiocese. He founded a religious community of sisters. He had a great devotion to the Sacred Heart and the Blessed Sacrament. He was one of the martyrs of the faith. And so it was a beautiful story. He was going, after the persecutions began early 1900s, the priests had to hide, or they had to leave Mexico altogether. And so what he did, he stayed in where he was, and he ministered and hid in different people's houses.
And incognito,
incognito. And so he was caught by the Federales at the time, I think 1917, 1920, something like that.
Okay.
And so his martyrdom is kind of beautiful in a sense that he was taken to the executioner, to this tree in where now where his a shrine has been erected for him.
This is in Guadalajara?
I believe so. Okay, in Jalisco.
Oh, Jalisco.
And so what had happened is he was taken, and then he was going to be the noose was going to be put around the neck by the executioner, and he had said in Spanish, obviously, "Let not the stain of sin come upon you." And he took the noose from the hand of the executioner and put it around his neck.
Wow.
And then he was hung that way. But it was just—it's a beautiful testament of. I mean, I think he was 33, 34 at the time,
wow.
And so he was fairly young as a priest who gave his life for the people of Mexico so that they can have the sacraments, so that they can have Jesus Christ, and
wow.
An oppressive government was kind of persecuting them for it. And so that for me, and I, how I got to know him.
Yeah, how'd you get to know him?
My mom had a coworker that knew the sisters that the congregation he founded. And so she gave my mom a piece of his, a relic of his, a bone of his.
Oh, really?
And so during my confirmation season, my confirmation formation, my mom brought home from work one day, like, "Oh, here, like, do you know about this guy? Here's a relic of his." I was like, "Oh,
do
okay.
You still have the relic?"
That I don't. We gave it back to, I was confirmed, I gave it back to my mom's coworker.
Okay,
so
okay.
From there, it was just a pamphlet that I had. I was like, this is really awesome, and this is really beautiful that, and so.
Does your mom's friend know that you have this religious name? I don't know if you.
I don't believe so. I don't believe so.
Oh, really cool. So, yeah. How she or at least how she introduced
right
that
it was
patronage.
Funny because when I told my mom I was going to change my name
what did
name,
she say yeah
she was really upset. I was like, "You don't like your given name that
your
gave
given
you?
Name is
Andres
yeah.
And so I told her, I'm like, "Well, mom, you also were the one who gave me this name, so you can't be mad."
What did she say? Did that
she
convince
was
her
like, well <didn't>
kind of okay yeah. Grudgingly she grudgingly get right. Andres. No, it's interesting when you change, you know, taking on a new religious name, the different ways in which that patronage in some way is lived out in a new way. So was Jose Maria your confirmation name as well?
Yes.
Okay. So you took, that's interesting. I don't know. I don't know if many people have taken a confirmation name as a religious name.
Oh,
I briefly considered it for myself because I love St. Aloysius is my confirmation name. And I thought about it and then I read about it and I just didn't have the same resonance. I wondered how many other people considered a confirmation name to double as, or at least to be affirmed as a kind of religious name.
Right.
But now I know. I you're going to be my go-to story for taking, because when we just had confirmations just a little while ago for the parish, for our young people. And oftentimes they'll be like, "Well, who should my," you know, at that age, you're like, "Well, what saint inspires me?" Or what, you know, sometimes it's a little bit of a chore or a task to do that, to try to like give them a motivation for like finding a friend or finding a spiritual patron.
Right.
Who knows? They might be with you all the way through in terms of vocation, you know,
right.
Where the Lord leads you. So your confirmation, that seed planted for vocation and religious life at that moment of confirmation.
Exactly.
I love it.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So Brother Jose Maria, fun fact. Give me a fun fact about you. So I've been doing the fun fact segment with your novice brethren in terms of something that someone who may know you well would know, but most people don't necessarily know about you.
Right.
The kind of little insight into
so
you.
So being recently a college graduate, I have to say,
yeah.
So my first beer, it's a fun story.
We're gonna get a fun beer story. I love it. Okay, alcohol. So your first alcohol. Okay, let's have it.
So my first beer, will say like, "Oh, I had it at a family party. I had this." So I went to World Youth Day in Madrid. In Spain.
Nice.
And so my first beer was at a bullfight in Toledo.
Wow. How old were you?
Well, so I was still in high school at the time.
Okay.
But I was 17.
Okay.
When I was 18 at the time. Where I think 18 is the
is illegal
European,
in Europe. Okay.
Right.
So you're a little underage.
We're a little underage.
At World Youth Day. In Toledo.
In Toledo, yeah.
For the bullfight.
For the bullfight.
Nice.
Right.
And so it wasn't the running of the bulls, it was a bullfight.
It was a bullfight.
Okay.
Right. Right.
All right. Very, very good. What do you think of a bullfight? It's not a cultural experience that people in the United States
look
a little askance at, frankly.
I think so. They had six bulls killed.
Yeah.
You know, within a span of two hours, I think it was. And so we were told that in Portugal, they just like kind of scare the bulls there and they just run around and everything. But in Spain, they actually kind of you have the bullfighters who are on horses and they kind of just throw spears at them. And so, it was definitely a cultural kind of like shock, like, oh my gosh, and you just see these, this thing happening. But then, I mean, it's just, I mean, it's a part of the culture, part of the history and everything. So it's just like, okay, we're just going to leave it there. But yeah. I mean, not to say that, but just to have that experience, I'm like, I'm happy that I was able to go.
Was that actually part of the formal World Youth Day?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
I was going to say.
The welcome package.
Welcome package. I think it was. Bulls kill while we drink beer. And then we're going to see the Holy Father. Right.
Well, I think at the time we were there.
We were 17. So.
Right. So it's like, do we go to Stations of the Cross or do we go to Wolfpack? Is that?
I love it.
I think that
there'll be time for Stations later. Right. Oh, I love it. Oh my goodness. Now this is truly a fun. I'm glad. This is a good story. A
good.
Plus.
Oh, good.
I love that's right. Fun fact: your first beer at a bullfight as you're playing hooky from the Stations. Right. Okay, a natural. And of course, the next thing to do is enter religious life.
Right.
Of course.
Exactly.
Natural progression of, from sanctity to sanctity. So, and I know you shared with me before a quote from Padre Pio that is kind of meaningful for you, at least that kind of resonates in your heart. And well, what is that? Maybe to share that with our listeners.
So it's pray, hope, and don't worry is, I think, attributed to him, uh-huh. if not said by him, uh-huh. you know, the Italian or what have you. I think for me, through the experience of not doing... stepping away from the university, mm-hmm. not doing too well in studies, yeah. not having that like the most intellectually kind of stimulated mind yeah. with regard to philosophy and theology, and yeah. still entering an order that is like heavy on intellectual tradition, doctrinal
yeah.
preaching.
Yeah.
I think it's for me, just you have to kind of take your life, your relationship with God, and kind of living out your universal call to holiness kind yeah. of a day at a time. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to, I mean, day by day is definitely kind of rolls through my head as like your yeah. relationship with God, the observance that you live, the life that you kind of lead and kind of are able to bring people closer to God in that regard. You have to take it a day at a time. Mm-hmm. I think pray, you have to have a relationship with God, hope, have that virtue in your life and always kind of keep plugging along, and then don't worry, because I think it's today's culture, if you don't have everything kind of set out, laid out in front of yeah. you, like a plan, if you don't have any, just so you have like there's a constant worrying among
yeah.
people. I mean, you have the pressure of like, oh, what are you doing after you graduate? What are yeah. you going to do? Or like, do you have a job lined up? Do you have an internship? And it's kind of just that worry. If you don't, it's just either from family or from friends, it's just that worry just piles upon you.
Yep.
So if you, I think pray, hope, and don't worry, Padre Pio, I think it's kind of a way of just saying, okay, God is in control.
Yep.
I can do so much, but ultimately God's going to be in control. But I will do my part in participating in that will that He has for my life to share that vocation of holiness and love that throughout the world, the world that I'm in. So
nice. I love that, because I think often the illusion today is that people want to be in control.
Right.
they want a sense of that. I'm in control of everything. Mm-hmm. I want clarity with what I want to do, like a full vision of like what everything, how everything's going to turn out. And in a sense, I want to kind of be the master of my own fate kind of thing. So
right.
That. And that's the perfect antidote. So you pray, it's not all up to you, mm-hmm. right? We hope. And of course, hope is that virtue, as you say, which calls us to keep going a day at a time, even though we don't know. I mean, hope, you don't hope for something that's not difficult. If it's not difficult, you don't hope for it. You've got, it's an expectation, right? It's right. something you know you're going to get. You only hope for things that you don't think you're going to get, right? Because mm-hmm. that's what hope does. It connects us to that which is only difficultly attained, mm-hmm. right? And then in the end, don't worry. Trust in the Lord. So
right.
nice. So that's a nice little daily, almost like a morning offering or a morning prayer. So I might put that. I love little, as you know from my preaching, I'm sure, little prayers to say, you know, just like a little, I call one-handed or five-fingered prayer. So if you can pray it on one hand, this goes back to your simplicity, the power of simplicity, right? If you can say it, you know, just in a few words, that can kind of touch something deeper, like initiate or activate mm-hmm. and bring awareness of something that can be very powerful. So right. pray, hope, don't worry.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Nice.
I love it. So I hope this a podcast for all of you, our dear listeners, has been a moment of encouragement, a sense of certainly insight into some of our novices and our own Dominican life, preaching for the salvation of souls. And may this day be filled with that connection with God. That whatever fears or sense of anxiety is in your life, that you place it in the Lord's hands to pray, to hope, and don't worry, always radiating the joy of the gospel here in the heart of the city. Amen.